Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Richard Cowan with the Steve Covey Show. Are you ready for freedom? Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Hey, we've got a real freedom fighter coming up on the show in just a couple of minutes, Angela Keaton. She's the representative at large for the Libertarian National Committee. She was, I'll have to ask her, she had a senior position here in California. By the way, I want to tell you, it is a sparkling, beautiful day here on the coast. The Canadian geese are flying over right now in formation. I can see the ocean right from my office here. And this is what it's all about, Dick, living in a cannabis-friendly California community with great weather, at least for now. You know, Fort Bragg does get a little rain now and then.
Well, it is also beautiful in Palm Springs, but I won't brag about that too much. It is a beautiful day in California, and California has a lot of problems and a lot of battles going on, but it ain't a bad place to be. Same thing we could say of the country as a whole.
You know, we've had such a great, 2 weeks now for the show. I can't imagine a more stellar group of people from both the libertarian side and from the cannabis reform movement. We've had Jack Herer, Eddie Lepp. Eddie Lepp's coming up in a day or two. Mm-hmm. Alan St. Pierre last Friday. What a great time that was. And we're going to turn now to libertarian politics.
Wait, remind everybody, though, if you would, please. We had a problem getting Edie Lehrman's show online, but which was really good, and particularly in terms of getting legal advice for people who really want to understand, who need to have sort of the basic framework of what their rights are and are not, is now available in the archives. And so I want to recommend that everybody check that out. Because
imagine a lawyer like Edie Lehrman has a waiting list of people that want to see her, and has big clients. I can't mention names, but here she is available to you. Thousands of dollars of free legal advice, yours for the taking, just by going to the show and downloading it on demand. That was a great interview. I learned stuff talking to her.
Indeed. It was a very informative show, and I want to apologize, Edie, for the problem of getting it online, but folks, it is definitely worth listening to. Now, excuse me, I just wanted to get that out of the way, Steve, before you go ahead.
Well, in case you've been sleeping under a rock, there's a huge controversy raging about the Ron Paul phenomenon. I call it the Ron Paul tsunami. It's just overwhelming everything and everyone. It's setting historic records in money raised. It is a group of self-appointed, self-organized people that can launch a $500,000 hot air balloon, blimp, or raise...
Those are the Democrats and Republicans that have the hot air balloon.
$6 million in one day with their money bomb. Absolutely fantastic stuff. And Ron Paul is attracting young people, old people, right-wing, left-wing, to what is, in my view, a completely libertarian philosophy. And yet, he is attacked by virtually all the other candidates running against me, all the other major candidates running against me for president. They say Ron Paul is a bigot. They say he's not a libertarian. So I'd like to bring on Angela Keaton, one of the most libertarian authorities I know, and ask Angela, is Ron Paul a libertarian?
Oh yeah, I mean, of course he is. I'm before I got on, I googled the various criticisms because I still can't get the whole thing is actually still really, really shocking. I mean, I can't quite get my head around the fact.
Well,
that
the neocons
explosion.
The neocons and the left wingers are going after, and we saw the article by Romano. Help me
Justin
out.
Okay, Justin Romano on HandyWar.com today.
Yeah.
Yes,
excellent.
I just read that about a half an hour ago. Yeah.
Completely bogus charges with no foundation, and yet they throw them around as if they're fact, trying to create a slur against Ron Paul.
The man is worried. Okay, the man is noticing now. I mean, the man's never going to let Ron Paul win, but he's running a little, just a tiny bit scared. That's
you're right.
You're going to see the dirty tricks. I mean,
they want to start the smear now. Because look at all the votes that he could take. The big fear, and I agree with Justin Romano, the big fear is that Ron Paul will run as an independent and completely eviscerate the GOP vote. Agreed?
That's what they're afraid of. I mean, unfortunately, I think if Ron Paul ever became that successful, I'm very, very cynical about the United States government and its role in what possible dirty tricks it would do to keep Ron Paul from.
Well, speak up. This is the place.
Yes. Of course, my very, very cynical side of me thinks that, the world would be one baby doctor short if Ron Paul really started, if it was really a threat to starting to remove the GOP vote, because, after all, it would be revolutionary if he became president.
We're going to have a revolution in this country, one way or another. The real question is it going to be a peaceful revolution or a violent revolution? And I will predict that if the Ron Paul people cannot get their day in court, in government, that we are entitled to a revolution. You know, we had Alan St. Pierre on the show Friday. He said that for 30 years, groups of people have made every conceivable, peaceful, legal challenge to prohibition. And it has been blocked. Even when we pass laws that clearly exempt people from prohibition, they refuse to uphold it, they refuse to obey it, and then they claim that the law was some kind of a ruse, that the voters were tricked, and therefore they don't have to obey that law. So I certainly agree with you that there is a tremendous amount of lawlessness and complete disregard for the Constitution by those who are attempting to rule over us right now.
Well, the Bush administration has been really blatant about that, which in one sense, I suppose you might say is good that they've been so blatant about it. It's right out there in the open. But one thing that this blatancy has, a lot of people have, have spoken out against it. The progressives and among the Democrats, obviously, it's easiest from a partisan point of view to do that. But the fact is that the same things were going on under Clinton. Clinton was a lot sneakier about it. But the blatancy of the move under Bush is a real test, which I think is partly why we've seen this Ron Paul phenomenon, the tsunami. But I think that it is also, in some ways, not to take anything away from the good doctor, a misnomer, because it really is not about Ron Paul personally. And I think that he would be the first to say that. It is what he stands for or what he stands against, maybe even better in the sense that we see all of these abuses by government. And I think that Ron Paul's tsunami, the thing that really gave rise to it, was the war, obviously, but also big budget, big spending Republicans, where you have this massive deficit incurred under the Republican Party and the assaults on private property rights under the Republican Party. And so you have Democrats who oppose it for one reason, but you have a lot of conservative Republicans who are very unhappy with the Frankenstein monster that they've helped create.
Well, now that segues nicely into my second question for Angela. What is going on with the Libertarian Party when the party has essentially gone along with the war? Has not spoken out clearly that I'm aware of for impeaching Cheney and then Bush. It seems as if the Libertarian Party that I grew up with has become more sedate and establishment. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, of course I can. Well, first of all, I would not say necessarily that the LP is somehow a bastion of pro-war thought. I think we've just had a lot of loud, you know, a small group of very loud people with a disproportionate influence. I mean, people who, generally speaking, these are not the major intellectual lights of the party. So we've just had some angry people who probably were not libertarians in the first place. I've heard Eric Garris say something to the effect that a lot of libertarians stopped, you know, they were not able to take their libertarian ideas from the abstract to the concrete post 9/11. But I think it was more of a case if we had the Libertarian Party has not done a particularly good, has not been responsible in internal education. We haven't really explained our values very well. We have not done a very good job at indoctrinating people, which is what you do. Murray Rothbard wanted us to build cadre, and the Libertarian Party has been extremely lax in that. So it's our own fault, essentially. But you know, there's a very small Libertarian Defense Caucus. There's a few people who keep insisting that the war is still good, and they'll keep going, and that's fine. I suppose I admire that level of stubbornness. But no, the LP is never going to be a bastion of pro-war thought because libertarianism is not about pro-war. I mean, that's not our ideology. We're not interventionists, and we're peaceful people.
Well, nevertheless, the Libertarian Party endorsed the war.
When do you think the Libertarian? You mean with the Iraqi exit strategy?
Yes.
If you go back in time, I did an interview with Shane Corey about what happened with the Iraqi exit strategy. It was a misfire because it had a few lines in it I thought, first of all, the Iraqi exit strategy, I absolutely loathed it, and it was part of the reason why I ran for the LNC. I mean, I absolutely thought it was a huge mistake, absolutely wrong time, wrong place, and not thought out in terms of its consequences. But do I think that made the LP pro-war? No, I think it reminded us just how actually anti-war we are, because if you remember, Steve, there was huge outrage after the IES. I mean, everyone wanted to, you know, get, you know, find who wrote it and get, you know, have that person's head on a plate. I think, yeah, if anything, it just reminded me that we will remain an anti-war organization, and our values do not support aggression and violence. And, you know, I mean, the other aspects too. I mean, I can go further and say that, you know, the war in the Middle East is racist, it's oppressive, it's imperialist. It makes us no different than other empires before. So it's there's nothing to recommend what the situation we're in.
Nevertheless, the party's been pretty silent about the effort to impeach Cheney.
You know?
What'd you say?
There are people in the. Here's the problem. I'll just be blunt because I, you know, who cares? I'm sure these statements will be someone on some blog or somewhere will translate these statements and to try to create some drama. But the fact is, there are some people in the Libertarian Party who. How should I put this? Given where they are in life and who they are, have a desperate need to be considered respectable, and it's part. I mean, it's in their self-image that, you know, that they're part of that they're mainstream, that they're acceptable. The fact is, though, if you've risen far in the Libertarian Party, if you've become high-ranking in the LP, you've kind of made a statement about your life that you're probably not particularly bourgeois. So, unfortunately, you're kind of at odds with yourself. So, for some of these people, not making statements about impeachment of the vice president makes them feel as though they're not kooky or wacky. Well, we don't want to do that because that sounds weird or crazy. Even though, okay, I mean, why? What's weird about impeaching Dick Cheney? I mean, Dick Cheney is a man just like you. He puts his pants on. You know, he's a human. You know, I mean, there's nothing special about him. He's not royalty. He's not. I mean, he's only a celebrity in our culture. He's not really. You know, he's not. He's not a god. He wasn't handed down from, you know, Moses didn't bring him down from a mountain or something. So I think it has more to do with people's sense of what they think is credible and respectable, which is unfortunate because usually that's a delusion. I mean, usually if you're a libertarian and you're loud about it in any way, you probably are a crank in some form, and you should embrace that, and you should embrace those values and not worry so much about, well, what other people think. And because we know what, you know,
did this happen in Germany? Were there people
that's
that thought
right.
it would look bad
say,
if they
yes.
came out against Hitler?
That's exactly.
Help me out here,
Dick. I was thinking that if you follow the logical conclusion of being terribly concerned about you being respectable in the eyes of your peers, you know, you'll lead us right back to Auschwitz because that's entirely what that. I mean, that is that mentality.
I mean, we've heard
you know.
That we were only following orders.
Orders,
but,
yes.
But now it seems to be, well, I was only trying to remain respectable.
Yes.
It strains my credulity. Dick, can you help me out here? Did we see that at all in Germany?
Well, the pressure to conform takes on a lot of different aspects to it. And the idea that in the late Soviet Union, for example, they stopped sending people to the gulag by simply unplugging their privileges. That and what you see in Washington is that if you are not a serious person, well, you may lose your job with a serious organization, which is by definition serious, as long as it doesn't object to the fundamental order of things. And this is speaking of marijuana, that really is one of the biggest problems. I think the number one problem that the marijuana reform movement has is because serious people are never interested in marijuana because, you know, they may smoke it and go in the closet and smoke, that's okay, but you don't bring it up in serious company because people will think you're Cheech and Chong, ha ha. And that really is, that sort of thing, I call it a meme, it's a mind virus that really blocks serious consideration of subjects that aren't serious. And the thing that Angela is pointing out there is really just like that, that, you may have argue against the, there may be substantive arguments against the impeachment of Cheney, but, there are really, the idea that you don't consider it, that you don't bring it up and debate it, is given what has happened in this administration, is clearly just moral cowardice, and that's.
Oh, does this stink to high heaven? And it's not just the Libertarian Party. Here in Mendocino, we had a group of citizens collect several thousand signatures and go before the Board of Supervisors with all these signatures. Mendocino's only got 88,000 people in it. So this was a significant proportion of the population in Mendocino. And you can see on any given day on certain corners people with their signs protesting the war, calling for the impeachment of Cheney. So here was a citizen petition brought before the Board of Supervisors of Mendocino for the county to pass a resolution calling for the impeachment. Now, impeachment isn't a sentence. It's an investigation.
It's an indictment.
It's an indictment. And we know all about that in the medical marijuana business because we've learned that it's easier to indict a bologna sandwich. It's as easy as indicting a bologna sandwich. But here, we're only calling for an indictment, and the Board of Supervisors refused to consider the matter, to discuss the matter, to even put it on the agenda. Why? Because it's not serious. Well, what the hell kind of propaganda ploy is that? It certainly is effective. Let's talk about that for a minute. How is it that we get to a point where impeaching someone who has clearly violated the rights of Americans, not to mention directed the bombing on unarmed civilian cities, how is it that that can't be a serious topic?
No, this is the thing that people are just afraid to do it because they want. I mean, it's conformity gone on conformity on steroids, I suppose.
Well, we saw fear about going against the war. Everyone stampeded to support the war. Now everyone's claiming that they weren't really in support of the war.
Yes, Steve, that's driving me up a wall. I'll give you an example. A cynical sack of human garbage wrapped in skin by the name of Andrew Sullivan. Andrew Sullivan has decided every political position, I think, since he's probably left either The Atlantic or National Review by sticking his finger in the wind. And suddenly now he's against the war and for Ron Paul. And this is a man who was a spokesman for torture during most of the years of the Iraqi war. People think, oh, they're coming around to the truth, but in my, and I guess again, I obviously I was born cynical. that I am just, I find it so distasteful that now after all this death and destruction and occupation and all the damage that's been done that cannot be undone, and the fact that we've now created, we'll soon have a generation of teenage boys who want to do nothing but blow themselves, Iraqi boys who want to blow themselves up in revenge. And if you think about it, in some ways, it's a justifiable revenge because, after all, from their point of view, an occupying government came in and destroyed everything, killed everyone, and is now ruling them and put up a puppet regime. So of course they're hostile and angry, and they're going to destroy. I mean, all the damage that this war has caused. I don't know who, you can't really hold anyone really ultimately accountable for it because it's become so grave and so beyond the pale that you can't fix it. Not everything can be fixed and not everything can be rectified. I mean, we could pull out tomorrow and it still wouldn't solve what the results of it. So I have really nothing but really hate in my heart for those who've done nothing but support and been cheerleaders for most of this war, and then decided when it hit critical mass, or 70% of the American people decided it really wasn't for them. It took them that long to make the decision that, stealing my money and then using it to kill other people was wrong. I mean, if it takes you 5 years to figure that out, I don't really think there's any real hope for you as a moral agent anyway.
I love it.
I'm sorry, it's early morning, guys. I'm sorry, I didn't even have coffee this morning, so I'm reacting.
I'd hate to see you on coffee, but this is just great.
Day 16 without coffee.
Angela, you don't have to apologize. We're just soaking it all in. Those were great, powerful statements, and they ring true. We're just letting that sort of settle out there on the airways because it needs to be said.
And you're talking about, back to why we wouldn't impeach Cheney. The Libertarian Party I grew up in, and of course my old man is a hardcore Rothbardian. He's a little bit more paleo now in his old age because you become a bit more of a paleo libertarian once you hit about 70 because, you reestablish that belief in God because you figure you've got only another 5 or 6 years left. But he used to say to me, you don't want to get involved with the LP. They have bylaws. My old man was so hardcore that he just thought that was the first step in the wrong direction for the Libertarian Party, that it became that established. But what's unfortunate is that the LP became a catch-all drawer when it lost its ideal. When it became less than ideologically stable, it became a refuge for anyone who really was disgruntled about something else, like the Reform Party did. It became the catch-all drawer. And now that we're a bit ideologically rudderless, we're paying the consequences of that. And, of course, you also have the psychological phenomenon of people who – people call it just – they say, big fish, small pond. But it's actually much worse than that. It's people who are not leaders among men in their own life and haven't had a great deal of success in their own life. They come into the LP and they can be somebody. You can be somebody important. The fact is, though, the person that they want to be is they want to recreate bourgeois success they don't have in their own life within the LP, and what happens is you dumb the party down to the point where it really doesn't stand for much of anything other than maybe school vouchers and, slightly lower taxes. And no one will ever be passionate about that.
Wow, that's a fantastic observation. I mean, it really does happen, I think, that people with not a lot of success in life come to the Libertarian Party and think, well, this is my shot at making my mark in life. And in order to make my mark, I've got to get these crazy libertarians to understand reality, to accept human nature, to stop being so naive and see the world the way the rest of the world sees the world.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a fairly widespread human phenomenon. Fortunately, the libertarians are not the only beneficiaries of that tendency. But the fact is, I think a lot of this goes back to just simple ignorance. Because if you take, for example, the Green Party or another quote unquote third party, there really isn't necessarily a well established ideological base for those parties. Now, if you go to the far left, I love the Maoists and that sort of thing. But the fact is that within libertarianism, you have had, Hayek and von Mises and Rothbard, you have had some really incredible intellects who have laid out the basis for a political philosophy. And the, you know, Angela is very rightly focused on the damage that we have done to Iraq. And, you know, but the problem is that even a justifiable war, even if when, you know, the war when we are attacked, war places enormous stresses on any free society. You can find that, you know, all of the founding fathers warned about, you know, the dangers of war. And, of course, the whole point about 1984 was that they were endlessly at war, so there was always a necessity for taking away people's freedom. So the idea of embracing a war that isn't absolutely forced upon you under the most direst of circumstances, and then not recognize the enormous threat that places to individual freedom in the country, is just absolute blindness.
Well, it presents a wonderful opportunity because, despite the problems, the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian philosophy provides the only real hope that I see for this country. Because, unlike any other party, the only agenda, real agenda for the Libertarian Party, is liberty. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to favor this group or that group or take money from the rich and give it to the poor. We want a level playing field. We don't want to pass this environmental law or tax you every time your cows fart because of the CO2 that's going into the atmosphere. We want to create a level playing field where everyone competes on an equal basis in an open market. And it seems to me that despite the problems, we continue to be the party not just of principle, but the party of answers. I mean, you give me the question, and I'll give you the answer, and that answer is going to be smaller government, following and upholding the Constitution, respecting the Bill of Rights, having courts which defend people's rights instead of the government, the police, and the prosecutors. We have a very simple philosophy. It's not that difficult to understand the Libertarian philosophy. And despite the spread of opinions about different issues, I think most libertarians can agree on most issues because we're all following the same libertarian roadmap.
Steve, asking people to adopt such a profound change in their philosophy, where they really embrace the philosophy of freedom, of liberty, of peaceful interaction with each other, that's probably more difficult, you know, that's an abstraction, really. What people can do is that they often can embrace it issue by issue, and that may not be strategically the most principled way of doing it, but because I want to flip this around here for a second before people say, you know, because I know how things often be interpreted. Before the last set of disruptions in the LP, and the Libertarian Party goes through these cycles of, you know, radical versus reform, you know, purist versus incrementalist, and so on. Most of my years of activism, and when I think I finally joined on my own, not as part of a family member, but Libertarian Party on my own when I was 19, college libertarians, is that I never had the luxury of excluding people from my activism that didn't share my core values. In other words, I had to work with Greens when we were doing, you know, hemp rallies and marches. I had to work with the militia movement on different matters, very extreme groups in very different ways. I mean, heck, we'd work with Earth Firsters. We didn't care if they came down on our one issue, whether it's, you know, decriminalization of marijuana or you know, getting rid of, you know, liberalizing the homeschool laws. You know, I had to work with many different people issue by issue, and I hoped in my mind that they'd get to work with me on this one issue. And maybe at that point I planted one little seed that they could work backwards. Well, I guess if I'm, you know, let's say I'm a Christian evangelical mother who's for liberal homeschooling laws, maybe I can think backwards and think, maybe eventually I'll get to the point where I can see, well, perhaps it is okay to let a glaucoma patient smoke a little pot, especially if he's 70 years old. It's not as if, you know, drug addiction at the age of 70 is really something you should be too concerned about. That's a way of actually, I mean, going issue by issue sometimes the way of doing it. And unfortunately for me, some of the most stubbornly pro-war people in the Libertarian Party have been so good on issues of on drug decriminalization and on sexual freedom. So I'm still willing to work with whomever on specific issues because, after all, it's not as if I can put on the ballot, here's the principle, freedom. or here's, you know, the non-aggression, you know, the non-aggression principle. I can't put that on the ballot. What I can put on the ballot is usually tax abatement or a school vouchers, which I'm not actually for school vouchers. That's, to me, that's a form of welfare. But I mean, I'll settle with school vouchers, you know, until I can abolish compulsory education. So, and I mean, that said, I'm not sure really how the best way to spread the word of that, because there's only so many people who really understand it through a philosophy. I mean, what I love about the Ron Paul movement, what's happened with the Ron Paul revolution, is that there's so much of it's a youth movement. I mean, you see college students happening, and that's the thing people should really be quite frightened about. That's what the establishment, or the man, as I call it, should be concerned of. All these college kids who are for Ron Paul. I mean, you see a kid with purple hair getting excited about the gold standard, you know something's happening out there.
Come on. Really?
Yeah.
That's You've seen great. Kids talking about the gold standard.
Yeah. It's frightening, huh?
It's every libertarian's wet dream.
Yes.
We've got another libertarian on the line here. Let's see if Paulie wants to jump in here. Paulie,
oh,
there?
Oh, sure. Have you talked about the arts, culture, and music group yet?
Thank you, Paulie. No, we haven't.
Okay.
Let's
shoot.
That.
Well, Steve, if you don't mind, I have a couple of new projects. I've got, if I'm going to come on a show, I have terrible, terrible mic fright. So if I'm going on someone else's show, it's entirely to plug another project. But
you'll never convince any of us of that. As a matter of fact, I saw you handle a minor catastrophe when Blog Talk Radio melted down and you were doing a show, and you handled it with such aplomb and expertise. I was very impressed. So I'm just not going to buy that. But if you want to go ahead, go ahead.
I'm going to plug Libertarians for Arts, Entertainment, and Culture. It's one of many great ideas I've stolen from Paulie. One of the things that the late Terry Liberty Parker, one of my favorite Austin activists and someone who was terribly influential in how I approach my activism, he would tell me the movement is out there. In other words, we spend way too much time inside the Libertarian Party thinking about the inside baseball or our bylaws and other things that have no basis whatsoever. I mean, have no bearing whatsoever on how we spread the word. We need to bring the message of liberty to others. And what I'm doing is, and Paulie was talking about, if you want to keep the party fresh and relevant and radical, is that we need to bring in people with sensible thought. And that's, we don't do outreach to people in other worlds. I mean, we're very, very good at doing inreach to people like ourselves. But so what I'm doing with Libertarian Arts, Entertainment, and Culture is that I'm going to, first of all, I'm establishing a list of libertarian artists, of which there are many. You'd be terribly surprised at how many libertarians are, you know, write plays and poetry and create sculpture and paint and do photography and act and sing and are in bands. Even on the LNC, we have several musicians. So what I want to do is establish something. First, we establish our core group, form a small board, and then get out there. Especially, I live here in Hollywood, is to reach out to libertarians who are not part of the party structure, not even part of normal movement structure. They read the ideas and they think this way, or in the case of many artists, feel this way about the world, but no one's really brought them in. So that's what we're going to do here with Libertarian Arts, Entertainment, and Culture. Hopefully, and what I've done with several of my shows of late is I've interviewed libertarian artists. This afternoon, I'll be interviewing Norma Jean, and we all know Norma Jean.
Well, let's take a minute and talk about Norma Jean.
Yes. She wrote the wonderful book From Cop to Call Girl. She's been an amazingly brave champion of freedom, and in her own life has made several sacrifices, including ending up going to prison. And, Steve, I mean, people go to jail for these so-called, you know, victimless crimes. I don't even know why we could even add crime on the end of it. Basically, the only thing that one did was offend the state sensibilities. But
incidentally, if I could just break for a second, Governor Schwarzenegger has suggested that it might be a good idea to release 22,000 nonviolent, non-sexual, non-threatening people a little bit early so that they would save billions of dollars. And the police lobby, their spokesmen in the California Assembly, are saying that such a move would ensure that Schwarzenegger was never elected to another office again.
This is your police state speaking. Yep.
Well, they're like the biggest union, aren't they?
Yes. Well, they contribute millions and millions of dollars to the gubernatorial campaign. They literally decide who's going to be the next governor. Without their endorsement and their millions, no one has been elected governor. It's just a given here in the state. The correction officers are the biggest union of all. Their people out of college start at $50,000. Go ahead, Angela.
Oh, the whole issue of it just only confirms my cynicism that way that such a statement would be made about the governor and that plan. But Norma Jean has had difficulties since she left prison. Prison does terrible things to people. I mean, it does change you mentally, emotionally. And she was our lieutenant. She did run for lieutenant governor, I believe, in 1986. And anyway, Norma Jean is going through some difficult changes and times right now. But she has an organization called, and it's the International Sex Worker Foundation for Art, Culture, and Education. She's trying to educate people about what happened to her and what happens to the terrible things that happen to sex workers in this country, not by their job, not by clients, but by the state. So she's going to get out. We're trying to bring her back and get her out here on the talking circuit. We're going to have our show. Eric Dondero had her on Friday. I want to have her on talking about, I think, more from the arts perspective tonight. And
this is on Blog Talk Radio.
On Blog Space. Talk Radio, yes. This is what I've been.
Liberated Space is the name of the show.
Yes. This
and what time?
4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern.
Good.
So.
Great.
But this is what libertarian LA-based libertarian housewives do in the afternoon as we do blog talk, bring the word right to your computer. But
now you say that prison changed her just as it changes a lot of people.
Yes.
Can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, it broke her spirit essentially. You know, I guess it's as simple as that. I mean, I've never been in prison. I hope not to ever be, but it's one of the worst things that can ever happen to some people, or for most people. I mean, you're locked away from the rest of the world, and I don't even know how to really describe it since there's nothing in my life experience really comparable to that. But it has changed her. It's made it, and I think crushed her. It's crushed her soul.
I got to share this with you, Angela. In order to keep from going crazy, I had to start messing with the guards. And the first thing I did is, they'd ask me how I had such dark skin. And actually, it's part of the disease that I have. It creates more melatonin. But I told them that I had been tanning in the in my suite. I always referred to my cell as my suite. Because I was in lockup 23 hours a day, solitary confinement. So I always told everyone I had the private suite, and I told them that I was tanning. I said, as someone who grows marijuana, I know all about ballast and how to tune them. So it's just a matter of tweaking the coils, and you've got plenty of suntan rays. And they would look at each other, like trying to figure out if I was telling the truth, and they actually called maintenance out to check the lighting. So these are the kind of things that get you through these little bumps in life. But of course, I was I'm making fun of something that does break people, and you see it breaking people. You see how everything that they do. You have to hold your hands inside your pants when you walk around. You have to stop and let, like a regular civilian or officer or whatever, walk down the hallway. You have to, like, hug the wall. And they have all these wonderful things to really build your confidence and self-esteem up. So I sympathize with what you're saying, because it really is geared towards identifying the troublemakers and then breaking their spirit. go ahead, please.
I want Norma Jean to tell her story tonight on the show, and to have her give the first person account, because I think this might be the real beginning of awareness for a lot of people if they hear what this experience is like from someone who's lived it. Just like when you speak to it, and there's other people who can speak to it, people need to hear that. Because after all, I mean, we do live in a country, the excitement of the Ron Paul revolution notwithstanding, most people believe that, you know, marijuana users and sex workers are the scum of the earth and that they deserve this fate. They deserve to be locked away with violent criminals. And that's the part of being an American I can never really get my head around. I mean,
even if you pass a law first, like I did, you still hear people saying, "Oh, he was asking for it." Yeah, he went ahead and tried to uphold the law after passing it. He was asking for it. So I've heard plenty of that.
You know why we'll never live in a libertarian world, Steve? In Anaheim at the 2000 Libertarian Party convention, we did a march around Disneyland to end the drug war. And it was a respectable march. I mean, everyone was dressed up really, really nicely. I mean, it was not our parade of freaks. We were all looking really good, and we held up these signs. And as we walked by this woman, and I still kind of remember what she looks like, and the look on her face and the expression in her hand and the way her hand gestures, and she said, "Shame, shame, shame on you," as she went by us. And, of course, I mean, I was a lot younger then and much more full of testosterone, and I wanted to beat the living crap out of her, but I just sucked it in and kept going. But that's the mentality we're up against, and that really is how most people think. Most people can rationalize the logical conclusion of that behavior from that hand of shame, 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 to locking someone away in a cage for behavior that affects no one, that is entirely voluntary, peaceful, and consensual. That to me is why it's something sick with the American character. That's why we'll never have a libertarian society, because we've never really
Angela, never say never. Okay.
Well, okay.
And I'll tell you why. Okay. Number one, the internet changes everything. It's changed the rules for fundraising. Before, you had to go across the country visiting one corporation after another, collecting bribes, then to make it legal, filing those bribes with the FEC and having a contest on who could collect the most bribes from the most corporations so that they would have the most obligations to those corporations once they got elected. That's the reality of before. But with the internet, a group of crazy activists get together and say, you know, let's do this money bomb. Let's pick November 5th, because that's symbolic for everyone. And let's just let it rip and see what we can do. And boom, 4.2 million dollars from the first money bomb. You can't do a money bomb without an internet. The internet changes everything. So, Angela, I say to you, it is the obligation, it is the mission, it is the calling of the intelligentsia, the thinkers of the libertarian movement, to capitalize now on this huge beam of bright light that is flooding the country with libertarian thought and principles called the Ron Paul Revolution, and ride that revolution, embrace that revolution, embrace the candidate, embrace those who support the candidate, and allow the people of the United States to hear a message of peace and prosperity through libertarianism.
That's a wonderfully uplifting Christmas Eve message, actually.
Well, the thing that in terms of single issues, I am really not, I keep insisting, a single issue person by any means, that I was, but the issue of...
Excuse me, Dick, I've got to speak up. There is only one issue for me, and there should only be one issue for the Libertarian Party. and that is liberty. What is liberty? I've asked a lot of leading libertarians, and I get a lot of different answers, and all of them are pretty vague, but I'll tell you specifically, liberty is freedom from the government, the right to be left alone. Think about it. The right to be left alone, to enjoy your life without someone knocking on the door telling you that you owe them money, that you're in violation of this or that ordinance or law or bullshit regulation. The right to be left alone. We're not saying that you have to abolish government, but why can't government be like the water company? It does its job, we pay them, and fine, done.
Amen to that, obviously, but in terms of what Angela was talking about before, bringing in people based on a particular issue, bringing them into the libertarian fold, one of the things I feel very, very strongly about is ending the persecution of sex workers. And this is something that is profoundly immoral, I think. And in fact, Jesus said,
It's not just prostitutes
will enter the kingdom of heaven before the lawgivers.
It's even more than that. It endangers society to have these kinds of laws. Because, in the olden days it was simple. They had a part of the town called the Red Light District. And mm-hmm. young boys and men went to that area. And that need was met in a professional way, I might add. But when that need is denied and you force people to hide and go around the law, you create more problems. And you create more rape. You create more dysfunctional marriages and assaults. Because you're going against human nature. And no matter what law you try to pass, you're not going to change human nature. And that gets to a fundamental gripe that I have against religious people. Because it seems to me like a fundamental blasphemy to assume that God screwed up when he made marijuana or when he made people that have a different sexual orientation than they are. Who are they to criticize God? God is God, and God did it right. And anyone that comes along and tells me that that isn't the way it is, well, in my mind, he's the devil. And he can preach all he wants and wrap himself in as many flags and crosses as he wants. He is the devil because he's trying to tell us.
Be too much now.
He's trying to tell us that God screwed up with marijuana. God screwed up with gays. God screwed up with Muslims. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. Go ahead.
He screwed up with the avocado because he made the seed too big.
It does.
Blasphemy.
The thing is that, and by the way, I think one of the point of where libertarians, for example, come into strong conflict with a lot of feminists, and that is that I'm amazed whenever I read self-styled feminists write in and oppose the legalization of prostitution because it is bad for women collectively. That it doesn't matter that a woman is harassed, beaten by, is jailed. No, that doesn't matter. It's important that prostitution remain illegal because prostitution reflects badly on women as a group. And this is, I think, one of the key differences, again, of libertarianism is the emphasis on the individual. And this is,
And not just the individual, Dick, but the fact that we own our own bodies. We own them.
And that's partially why, I mean, it is from my feminism, because there are, granted, the school of gender feminism, Richard, has unfortunately become the dominant school of feminism. Other schools of feminism are absolutely for decriminalization and for the right of physical autonomy.
Absolutely.
And it's because of my feminism that basically it's the prostitute who is the one being punished.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely unconscionable.
And yet the same society that does that is aghast that in Muslim society we punish the woman who's been raped. Right, it's the same thing.
It is, but of course we have trouble turning that mirror on ourselves because we so badly wish ourselves to be civilized.
So, Angela, where does gay prostitution fit into the theory of gender feminism?
Well, that's a very good point, Paul. It's a wonderful point, Paul. It's something that they don't wrestle with very well. I think only Robert Jensen, who's an anti-porn activist, has tried to address it. It doesn't fit in because the fact is they're talking about the issue of male gays, though some would say that because gay pornography is, you know, by men for men, that it's once again, you know, the male sexual oppressiveness is what's at issue here. That men are inherently sexual oppressors, and it's an anti-male philosophy in many ways. I don't mean anti-male in a traditional sense that feminist bashers usually mean, but it makes male sexuality at the core of all evil. Which you can't. I mean, for someone who's either a radical like I am, or for someone who's a traditional Christian, that's a huge affront. I mean, without male sexuality, you don't have the family, you don't have the structures of patriarchy that really do keep us civilized. So that's you're right, Paul. It doesn't fit. I just want to say, Steve, I'm coming up on soon the 7th anniversary of the first time I inhaled.
Well, congratulations.
It was a big deal because I went through almost all my adult life, or at least at that point all my adult life, speaking out on decriminalization issues, but I had never used marijuana and could never really discuss what its actual effects were. So for all I knew, it really was because my old man, who absolutely doesn't believe in any kind of drug laws, but he'd say to me, well, you know, you don't want to try that. That's a hippie drug. That's the hippie. Only the hippies do that. You kind of want to stay away from that. I had never was able to ever really speak on that issue. So it's only been the past 7 years, but it made me understand certain things about the properties of marijuana, including what marijuana does for, you know, well, female problems, as they say in the South.
Excuse me, but could you clarify what hippie drug connotes?
That's, you know, because when you do, when with, I guess what it was that in the 80s, when I was, you know, a little kid and I was learning about these things, you had the drug of ambition, which was cocaine, which, by the way, was very common. You know, cocaine was much more commonly used during the 70s and 80s, though our country is conveniently, rewritten history. The fact is lots of successful people were using coke, including middle-class people.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the ambitious drug. The hippie drug meant it was the drug that was of less ambition, of slowing things down, of people who didn't work very hard. But the fact is, of course, throughout the years, as I've known in the libertarian movement, some of the most aggressive, hardworking, productive people in the libertarian movement, of course, you know, light up a bong first thing in the morning and, you know, close the end of the day with a joint.
There's actually been some studies, rat studies, was it rat stick or something like that, where they, no, it was people. They gave people access to alcohol in one group and access to pot in another group, and then they had them do repetitive tasks that would give them a certain amount of points at the end of a given cycle. And the alcohol people just blew right past the pot people until they had their alcohol. And then they couldn't do squat. The pot people consistently just chugged along, and they soared past the alcohol people after a few days. But then it got interesting because I heard this story. If you want a citation, I got it from Dr. Robert Melamed, who's the head of the biology department in Denver, Boulder. So what got interesting about this study is that not only did the potheads totally outperform the alcohol people, whose performance just fell apart as soon as they got alcohol, and they had access to all the alcohol they wanted, so they didn't do that well. But the pot people not only did better just consistently, because even high they could keep doing it, but they actually, and this wasn't just once, this was in several cases, they figured out ways to beat the system, so they got even higher scores.
Well, we're used to beating the system, figuring out looking for loopholes, as I like to say.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
One of the cultural association of certain drugs is really based upon preconceived notions, because you can see in the late
1 minute,
Dick, of alcohol and Catholicism,
Dick,
Rome, Romanism, and rebellion.
I just want to make this one point upon which everything is based. The idea is promoted endlessly, ceaselessly, that smoking marijuana causes you to become amotivational. Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute, because I've done a little research on this. Mm-hmm. And what they call amotivational, I call refocused. Because the bullshit stuff that you were doing before, when you get high, you don't care about doing that anymore. The stuff that you really want to do, that you should do, that will probably make you a millionaire because you'll just keep doing it and you'll become better and better at it, be it Ben and Jerry's ice cream or whatever, that's what happens to the people that smoke pot. They don't become amotivational. You check in with them a year or two later and they're doing something and they're probably making money at it and they're probably excited and doing well at it because they've cut out the bullshit. And that's what I think smoking pot does to people. And in the case of hippies, they're just making a lifestyle choice that they don't want to spend all of their time chasing after the almighty dollar and consuming, that they have other priorities in their life. And I know a lot of hippies that are living to a ripe old age, so there's certainly something to recommend that. Now,
Dick, it absolutely changed a certain health condition I have. I was able to manage a certain monthly health condition because I had discovered, my God, this cures certain forms of pain, at least temporarily for me.
Oh, that's just anecdotal.
It was all in my head. Probably like the female condition, it was all in my head.
You're merely an anecdote. You are not an individual.
I'm not a data point.
Merely an anecdote.
If this were an all-women show, I'd go into more detail, but I think the listeners would draw the inferences of what it was I was trying to cure. So.
Well, I think we get the picture.
So, Dick, I interrupted you. I interrupted you. Please go ahead and make the point.
Hmm?
I interrupted you, so go ahead and make the point you were going to make. Or did that just kind of pull it all together?
No, well, my point was simply that, you know, again, that there are preconceived notions about drugs and the groups that use them. And I was talking about the case of the late 19th, early 20th century of Catholics and alcohol, because the Protestants were prohibitionists. And so it was rum, Romanism, and rebellion. And the idea was, you know, those are the people who are using alcohol, whereas we good Protestants don't. And that works. You can see that, Gabriel Nahas, the godfather of modern reefer madness, is an Egyptian of Coptic Christian descent. And his uncle used to point out to him bums in the street in Egypt and tell them that they were, you know, drugged out on hashish. And he recalls it. I mean, this is his own recollection of things, although he didn't understand what it was he was saying. And that really is the part of the overall cultural aspect of things. And so, of course, hippies are visible, whereas, you couldn't tell by looking at Carl Sagan that he smoked marijuana.
Well, hippies use marijuana, and anyone that uses marijuana or talks about marijuana isn't serious, therefore hippies aren't serious.
Exactly. And, of course, I think also one of the things is that Steve, you may have fed into a cultural stereotype yourself when you say that hippies reject, capitalist materialism, because I know a lot of sharp businessmen who are hippies who definitely have the acquisitive knack. So, you know, that said something else again. You know.
Well, I do too, but I think that that one thing I see among my hippie friends is an emphasis on quality rather than quantity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's what you learn along the road of life and using cannabis.
We are out of time. We are out of time. I just realized. Angela, this has just been absolutely wonderful. And, Paulie, thank you for bringing that up to remind us about that, because the importance of arts to cultural and political movements is very, very good. And speaking of arts, we will go out with the Carol of the Buds by the Cannabis Chorus. And thank all of you. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Good night.